Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter at www.churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Thinking of launching a church school partnership or looking to strengthen an existing partnership? In this episode, Jake McLaughlin, author of The Mission-Minded Guide to Church and School Partnerships, speaks with Lewis Center Associate Director Ann A. Michael about how churches can build effective, transformative relationships with children and teachers in their community.
I'm Ann Michael, Associate Director of the Lewis Center for Church Leadership, and I'm also the editor of Leading Ideas e-newsletter. And I am talking today with Jake McLaughlin, who is the Director of Serve Ministries at Florist United Methodist Church in Herndon, Virginia. He is also the author of The Mission-Minded Guide to Church-School Partnerships, a book that came out in 2017. And I should also mention that Jake is a graduate of Wesley Theological Seminary. So we're thrilled to be talking with him today to give him the opportunity to share a little bit of his experience and his knowledge about how churches can effectively engage with local schools. So Jake, welcome to you.
I am so glad to be here, Anne. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah. I thought we could begin by having you share with our listeners just a little bit of information about your ministry setting at Florist United Methodist Church, because people in other areas of the country probably aren't as familiar with Florist. So can you say a word about the congregation and its mission?
Absolutely. So we are in Northern Virginia, right outside Washington, D.C., and we are a church, a United Methodist congregation, that's actually been in the same community for 125 years. And so we have a long history of time and experience and being in this location. We are a larger congregation. We worship, there's probably about 1,300 of us in worship on Sundays between three different campuses, including one online campus. And we are also a church that really cares about the community and a church that really strives to put Christ in the center of our community.
Mm-hmm. And so I know that one of the ways that you have been engaging the community quite actively in recent years is through a partnership with a local elementary school. So can you briefly share with our listeners the nature of that partnership and just briefly how it evolved?
Absolutely. So we've actually been in partnership with Hutchison Elementary School, which is about 2 miles down the road from us, for almost 20 years. And that relationship really started pretty organically with people in our congregation who were wanting to seek out ways to do more mercy and compassion work within the community. And, you know, since that time, it has really evolved into a really important part of the work that we do in the community. We have several ministries that we do there, including ministries related to mentoring, summer camp activities. We teach English to adults in the evenings, and we also work on issues around hunger and nutrition. So we have, over the 20 years, we have impacted thousands of kids at the school and the surrounding community, but we've also had thousands of our members engage in works of compassion, mercy, and social justice.
Wow, that's really impressive. I think that in the last 4, 5, 6 years, we here at the Lewis Center have really observed a growing interest in how churches can partner with schools in their communities. I think you could probably call it a movement. And so I wanted you to speak to that. Are you seeing that as a trend? And if so, where do you think it's headed?
You know, that's such a great question. And, you know, my hope and prayer since I've gotten really engaged in this work and have been able to work with this congregation is my hope and my dream has been that it becomes a movement that impacts thousands of students and thousands of churchgoers that want to make a difference in their own community. You know, and the most beautiful thing that I see outside of the obvious awesome things that happen when churches impact schools and are able to help kids learn better or partner with teachers and the like, is just the fact that it is such a tangible way to A, know the community, but B, know what type of issues and things are in the community. And so one of the things that I tell people that I meet who are interested in this topic is, if you really want to know what a community looks like, all you have to do is go to a school and find out, because that's what your community looks like. Everything from socioeconomic to diversity, you can learn all that by going to your school. And now, as it relates to it being a movement, what I'll also say is that, you know, just this past week, I believe the Missouri Annual Conference wants to of the United Methodist Church wants to quadruple the number of church and school partnerships that they have in Missouri over the next few years. And so I have started seeing a number of different denominations and church groups kind of really going for this bold experiment and this bold idea of trying to impact local schools and local, you know, and kids in their community.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you see that accelerating interest, because I think so often in the church at large, you see these sort of flash in the pan ideas that have interest for a while, and then a couple years later, people move on to the next shiny object, and it's hard to sustain interest in something. But I do really think that this movement has traction and does seem to be continuing to gain support and interest. Let me ask you, I think it's typical when churches think about this kind of work of engaging with their local schools, they often think in terms of what the church can do for the school. But I think there's another side to the equation of how school engagement can also strengthen churches. And so I wonder if you can speak to how your community has strengthened, developed, grown, been enriched through the partnership that you have had with the school.
Yeah, I think of it, Anne, in kind of two different ways. The first being on an individual level. And that would say is, you know, for the congregation member that chooses to make a decision to volunteer in that setting, will likely see transformation in their own life. They will, you know, I can't tell you how many people, we have a mentoring program, for example, and we have a number of people that do it, you know, once a week before they go to work. And I can't tell you how many of those individuals come to me afterwards and say, this is the best part of my day every Wednesday or every Thursday that they go. It's the best part of their day. And what you often find, in fact, is that people will make multi-year commitments. So our average, regarding our mentoring program, we have an over 70% return rate for all of our mentors. And most of them stay 3 to 4 to 5 years. So they'll, you know, first start working with a student at first grade, and they'll stay all the way to sixth grade. And some of them will even go with the students whenever they go to middle school. So individually, you see that all the time is this personal transformation that happens. As a congregation, I see it as the power of a shared value around children living in poverty or children in general. So one of the great things that we've been able to identify here at Floris over the last, you know, 15, 20 years is that when it comes to children, we are almost always going to say yes. And it's a really powerful thing for people who come to church who want to be, you know, part of a mission. They want to be able to use their hearts and their minds to do not just, you know, grow spiritually, but also get their hands dirty in the work of mission and ministry and all those things. And when you say, you know, we share as a value the wellness, wholeness, and fullness for children and their lives, that perpetuates a lot of what you do, from what you do at Sunday school on Sunday mornings to what you do for mentoring and for summer camps for kids that aren't necessarily kids that come to your church, but are kids that become part of your church through the services that you, the services and the ministries that you provide.
Thank you. I do think there's just tremendous power in this, and how relevant it is to be thinking in these days about really naming the value of standing for children. I know that the partnership that you have had with Hutchinson Elementary School has developed over many years, and there were turning points in that relationship. There's some organic growth in terms of how it unfolded. But I'm wondering if, you know, knowing what you know now and the experience that you've had, if you could think back and if you had the opportunity to start from scratch, what would you do differently? Are there things you might have done differently? Are there certain considerations that would be in your mind if you were going to start over?
Wow, that's a great question. And I talk about this book a lot of time, you know, quite often, but no one's ever asked me that, which is great. So this has given me an opportunity to really think that through. You know, I would say on a personal level, so just thinking about, you know, being a person who's responsible for missions and outreach at a congregation, I would say the thing that I would have done quicker and would have put more focus on was the relationships that I was building with the staff and the teachers and the community. And I preface that by saying it's not that I didn't care about relationships or that those weren't important. But what I have found over the years of doing this and a transition from one principal to another principal, a transition in leadership in my different ministries, is that relationships are what tie us together and what bind us together. And, you know, if anything, how I typically approach things when I first started and really how we've always kind of looked at ministry as a whole within Serve Ministries is that we were always focusing on those who we were serving. You know, so we always wanted to make sure that we were keeping the best interest of kids or the best interest of individuals who are unhoused or whoever it may be. We always kept that as a primary driver for the ministries that we did. And a close second to that, I would say now, is the relationships that you develop with organizations, with the people who you serve, and the people who serve with you. I would have put a higher value on those relationships. And again, it's not to say that I didn't always care about people and all those things, but rather to say relationships and that mutuality that happens through relationships is what binds organizations, institutions, and people together. And any type of transition that might happen can still be there with great relationships.
So is the word for that in a church that may just beginning to think about forming a school partnership, would it be for them to invest time up front in getting to know their principal or getting to know teachers or getting to know their school board as a maybe not a beginning step, but a early step in the process?
Absolutely. So whenever I have the opportunity to talk about the book and talk about school partnerships, one of the first things, if I only have a few minutes to talk about it, one of the things I say is focus on building great relationships. If you do that, if and when you build great relationships, amazing things happen. And there's also a lot of give and take that can happen too, because, you know, I just think about, I think about when we focus on relationships, there's often more grace and mercy that develops within those relationships. So for example, if we have like an ESL ministry and I don't have a good relationship with the coordinators and I make a mistake, they might get really angry at me. However, if we have a really great relationship, there's automatically grace that's going to be there and mutualities that's going to be there because we have that great relationship. And so a great example of that is when the new principal came to Hutchison, we had an opportunity to set ourselves up to having a great relationship. And the ministries and all those things were really important. But because we spent a lot of time developing trust and mutuality, we were able to have really honest and great conversations about things we should do, things we should change, and opportunities for the future.
What would be some suggested how-tos on that? If I mean, you know, when this new principal came in, you already had an existing partnership between the two institutions. But if someone were just beginning down the road of thinking about engaging their school, what would be some simple approaches to beginning to forge that kind of impactful relationship with other leaders?
Yeah, just on a practical level, I would seek out any connections that you might have with the school and start there. So it might be, for example, you have students in your church that go to that school. Well, I would talk to their parents. Or maybe you have a teacher that goes to your church that is in that school. Talk to them first. Get a sense. Get an understanding. And then have those connections help you connect to other people. I will say, generally speaking, most districts and counties, school boards and groups like that are typically open to business partnerships, community partnerships, and even church partnerships. But part of it is just reaching out and initiating those conversations. So I would say, just on a practical level, find those connections. But then also, if that doesn't, if you don't necessarily have any connections, reach out to the principal and say, hey, listen, I'd love to come visit. And hey, what's your favorite coffee drink? I'll bring it with me. You know, so who's going to say no to a great cup of coffee or to a latte or a frappuccino with seven pumps and, you know, whatever people drink nowadays. So there's always things that you can do. But the other thing I would say is, before you go into that conversation, also be as knowledgeable as you can about the school. So a lot of school districts will put demographic information, they'll put testing information, they'll put a lot of different information on their website about the school. And that is also a really great way to be able to have the conversations.
You touched on something a moment ago, which was the question of the receptivity of schools to partnerships with churches. And I will say, from the conversations that I've had with people around the country about this issue, what I see is a lot of variability based on the area of the country in terms of how much sensitivity there is about the idea of churches getting involved in public schools. I think if you went just across the Potomac River to Montgomery County, Maryland, you would find a different sort of sensitivity to it than you do in Virginia. And I just wondered if you could speak to that about how we are respectful of the church-state division when we're working with public schools and what you've learned in your conversation with various leaders around the country about this issue.
Yeah, I think so. One of the first things I'll say is that a lot of school districts have very clear rules about how they work with religious institutions. So I always encourage churches to make sure that they are fully aware of those things. I think the other part, as it relates to receptivity, one of the reasons I always suggest to try to find those connections is because, when you're able to find, let's say, for example, you're looking at a school that's a mile down the road and two of the teachers there are actually members of your church, you can actually ask them to start engaging the conversations, because they likely have really good relationships with the PTA, with students, with the administration, to be able to say, hey, listen, you know, I'd really like you to meet my pastor. You know, we've been talking about partnering with a school. We've been talking about, I've been telling them about the great things about the school, but also the challenges. And would you just meet with, you know, our pastor or meet with our missions committee, just so we can get to know you? What I'd also say, Anne, and this one's, I don't want it to come off let me not preface it. You know, the truth of the matter is, I think when we go to institutions or groups or organizations that we want to partner with, when we go humbly and with humility to say, hey, listen, we are a church that wants to get to know our community better and we want to have an impact on our community, but we don't know how to do it with the school, or we don't know what challenges you face. And just going into a conversation with just a basic framework of being able to say, tell us how we can serve you. That's much different than a church going to a school and saying, hey, it's our understanding you got hungry kids and we can fix that. So won't you just let us do that?
Right. So always beginning by asking right, what's needed.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so important because, you know, part of it is what you don't want to do is go into conversations as if you have all the answers already. You know, kind of going in judgment free, full of grace, just being able to say, hey, listen, one of the best ways that we get to know community is getting to know you and getting to know the school. Tell me about what brings you joy and what keeps you up at night. If you go into that, I think you're going to learn so much just by asking those two questions. You're going to learn so much. And so any preconceived notions you have, any preconceived ideas about what they need versus what they don't need. I mean, and if it's okay, I'll tell you just a really quick story.
Sure.
If you were to look at the demographic data around Hutchison Elementary School, you can make a boatload of assumptions about what people want. I think you can do that. Absolutely. And I think on the most part, you'll probably be right. So when we look at the demographic data, you know, you'll see issues around affordable housing. You'll see issues around poverty. You'll see issues around food insecurity. And truth be told, we've been working with the school in such a way that we're able to meet those needs. But when you also really get down to it and you say, hey, listen, we're doing these things. We're helping meet these needs. Tell us about your life. Tell us about what's going on. And one of the things that we have discovered is, you know, we're meeting these very important needs. We're mentoring kids. We're doing hunger things. We're looking at the possibility of doing some advocating around housing. But you know what the parents told us recently? They said, hey, listen, can you guys help with a pedestrian safety issue? And so, again, we can look at the community and go, wow, they need more affordable housing. Wow, they need this. They need that. But even today, after 20 years of relationship, we still have opportunities to just sit down and be present, be fully present, and just listen to what parents want, to what teachers want, to what the administrators want. And in fact, we're actually meeting with some public officials tomorrow to talk about some ways for them, for the public officials to improve public safety and pedestrian safety before next school year.
Yeah, that's really, as you're describing that, I'm thinking that's what a fully mature relationship is like. I mean, people honestly bring their needs to the table. I mean, that's what a fully mature partnership is like. It's really wonderful that you guys have achieved that. I want to move next to another question. And I know that so many of the models for church school engagement are, they require a good amount of human capital. They require a lot of physical and financial investment. Certainly the work that you're doing is resource intensive and intensive in terms of the amount of volunteer resources that are required. What have you learned about sustaining that commitment over time? I mean, and staying at anything in a congregation for 20 years is quite notable in my mind. So how do you keep people engaged in that work over the long term?
Oh, sheer grace and lots of energy. You know, I think part of it, Anne, is first identifying it as a value, which I talked about earlier. I think the second thing is always be working with your leaders and watching out for burnout. And so one of the things that I do is I spend a lot of time making sure that my leaders feel empowered. I make sure they feel like they have a good handle on it. And I always make sure that they're still passionate about it. I will tell you, just as a general rule as it relates to volunteer leadership, is if it feels like an obligation to your leader, it's time for them to go. And not, hey, you got to kick them out, nothing like that. But as soon as it feels like an obligation to somebody and it's not a passion for them anymore, it's probably a great opportunity to seek out a new leader, because likely there is a new leader somewhere around that wants to put the energy and effort and bring that new energy into that ministry. So I would say that is one way. The other thing is we try to keep things fresh by always having conversations about how we need to do things differently.
Yeah, can you just say in a real quick word, what does your leadership team for this project look like? I mean, do you have one group that kind of is overseeing the whole school's ministry, or do you have different groups that are responsible for different aspects of it? How does it tie into your leadership?
Yeah, the short answer is I have leadership teams that manage specific ministries. And because that's where I want them to focus their energy and effort. So we used to have a model where we had several different leaders kind of working together, and we moved to a new model, which was, the serve director, the person who leads the outreach and missions, is kind of the overseer, the facilitator of ministry, the keeper of the overall partnership. But you have leaders who are passionate about mentoring or English as a second language or camp or whatever it may be. And their role is to manage and put their energy and effort and passion into those specific ministries.
Okay. You have developed so much expertise in this area through the work that your church has done. I'm wondering, where have you found helpful resources or models or guidance for this journey? And or has this just been something that you've had to make up as you go along?
A little bit of both. I have a lot of it has just been learning as we go. I will say a lot of it has been relationship building here. It's at here and with the school. Identifying and figuring out the passions that are within our congregation. But then also, through this work, I've been able to develop some really great relationships with other faith communities that also have relationships. And there's a lot of learning and a lot of sharing of information that takes place. So a great example of that would be there's a church called Trinity Presbyterian that's also in Herndon, not too far from us. And they have a relationship with an elementary school as well. And one of the things I found out from them is that they actually held monthly meetings with the principal. And I had never done that. And this is probably 4 or 5 years ago. I had never really done that with the previous principal. And when I realized that they had done that, I was like, oh my gosh, I think if I were to do that too, that'd be amazing.
And so I'm so glad you mentioned that, because yeah. I think sometimes people get so siloed within their own local church that they forget to think about the fact that there may be another church just up the road that they can learn from.
Absolutely. Well, listen, they taught me a lot, because part of what they were doing is I came into a ministry that was already there that needed some enriching and redevelopment and reorganization. They had just started their partnership. And, so when I found that out, when the new principal came, I said, hey, listen, I really want to have a great relationship with you. And how about we meet monthly? Are you okay with that? And he was great with it. And it's been such an important part of my life. And then, the other thing I'll say is what's been interesting, too, is that I've been getting more involved in the last 2 years with some community organizing work, mm-hmm. Which has been very beneficial for me. And I'll just mention a book that really helped me start thinking about how to develop more trust and mutuality within the communities of people that we were hoping to serve and hope to serve with. And that's a book called Going Public, written by Michael Geekin.
I am well familiar with it, yes.
Yeah, it's a great book. And actually, in early 2017, I went to a 5-day training with him in New Jersey, and it was awesome, 5 days. It was hard. It kind of stretched my brain a little bit, but it was awesome. It was an awesome opportunity.
Right. I mean, you have stressed the relational aspect of this work so much that I think that a community organizing paradigm really fits very neatly with what it is that you've been talking about. Let me begin to wrap this up by asking you this question. What's your inspiration in this? What continues to sustain you? Is there any particular individual, model, example that has really inspired you to stay with this work?
Yeah, I'll give you a recent example. We were going to do some listening sessions with parents back in, it was either early April or May. And before it was our turn to do the listening sessions, ask questions of parents and things like that, the principal actually asked the principal of the high school to come by and talk to the parents about a program where students going to high school could actually get community college credits for the classes that they were taking. And at the end of her talk, you know, I have very, very young children, so I'm not even thinking about elementary school. But one of the things that popped in my head was, wow, they're really talking to these parents really early. I'm like, is that the right thing to do? And it was just something that popped in my head. And after the principal from the high school spoke, the principal at Hutchison said, parents, you need to know why I'm putting this in front of you now. If your kids know that they can succeed, if your kids know that this is an opportunity for them now, and you know it's an opportunity for them, then this is something that you can start preparing your children for right now. And it was a really powerful thing to watch. But later, we had a meeting just to do kind of an evaluation of our conversations. And one of our members who's been actively engaged at the school is a retired principal. And he looked at the principal at Hutchison, his name is Ray. He looked at Ray and he said, Ray, there are going to be kids that go to college because of that talk you just gave to the parents. And I almost started weeping.
Yeah.
And because it was such a beautiful thing to be a part of. And, you know, educators, teachers, administrators, man, they do hard work. It is hard work to educate children, to really care for children and want them to succeed, you know, as a parent, as a teacher, and all those things. And it is also one of the most beautiful things for us as a church to be a part of, to seek out the wholeness and fullness for children. And that has been, that was the reason I wanted to write the book. That was the reason I got into this. That's the reason why I've stayed involved, is because of those opportunities to see what it means to seek out that wholeness and fullness for children.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Jake. I think your articulateness in being able to describe this vision for what's possible and what you see happening in this has been so powerful. And I think so powerful as you have taught others on this subject. I'm really grateful for the work that you guys are doing at Floris. I'm grateful for your personal witness in how you're leading this, but also in how you're being so generous in sharing what you know with others, how generous you've been in supporting our work with this at the Lewis Center. So I want to thank you for all of that, and thank you for sharing with us today.
Hey, thank you so much. And Anne, obviously, it's been, you know, great working with you and with others at the Lewis Center. And it's just it's so wonderful to work and partner and know organizations and people especially that really care about helping churches do the best work they can.
Thank you for sharing that, Jake, and thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Leading Ideas Talks has been brought to you by the Engaging Local Schools Video Toolkit. This engaging resource guides your congregation in considering questions that are critical to the success of a school-focused service initiative. Engaging Local Schools is available on download and DVD at churchleadership.com/shop. On our next episode of Leading Ideas Talks, Franklin Planner creator Hiram Smith speaks with Lewis Center director Doug Poe about leading with purpose, as well as practical, transformational leadership lessons.
I need to go back way. When I was 19 years old, I was in London, England, doing a two-year mission for my church, and I had the opportunity of spending about 30 minutes at the feet of Winston Churchill. And it was just 2 years before his death. This was in 1963. And it was just a small group. And I don't remember how I lucked into this, but he was just kind of visiting. He wasn't giving a big talk, but he said, you know, he said, I was obsessed from birth that I was put on the planet to make a difference. And then he said, almost wistfully, he said, you know, I hope I've made a difference. And I sat there thinking, are you kidding me? You saved the free world, for granted.
Yes, yes.
You know, I think you made a difference. But it was like a baton was passed to me that day that, you know, I was put on the planet to make a difference too.
Leading Ideas Talks is available on iTunes, the Google Play Store, and Stitcher. Subscribe today. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to Leading Ideas at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.